It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 148. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. First up on this podcast is Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. We talk about Media Day and some of the news and non-news that might have come out of there, including what the offense might look like a little differently, some of the talent that's on the roster, and some of the talent that might be on the roster. We also then, Matt and I, talk about the World Cup. We talk about biting and when it's appropriate, and maybe when it's not. And then we also talk about Media Day and some of our takeaways for the future. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Catch us at loyalcougars.com. Download us on iTunes and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout Podcast, our frequent guest, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. Brandon, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be back.
So this week, of course, was Media Day, which I think maybe our expectations now that this has happened a few times in Independence are that we're not going to get the massive scheduling announcements on Media Day, apparently, because they have not come. But well, let's start with the scheduling piece. Tom Homo in his State of the Program did talk about scheduling, and based on body language and reading the comments, Brandon, my impression is he seems very unstressed about every part of the schedule besides November. Is that a fair characterization, you think, of how Tom Homo reacted and discussed the scheduling?
Yeah, it certainly appeared that way. His work on scheduling has been incredible to me. For him to be able to pull what he has, given the restrictions, it's really remarkable, in my opinion. And I've long said that November scheduling is the key. November schedule this year, not great. And I maintain it'd be great for both Utah and BYU to still play that last game, because no matter what happens, you've always had that last game, which means a heck of a lot to play for. And short of that happening, he seems pretty confident that he can schedule a Pac-12 a team in every November, which helps tremendously. You have Cal, who's the doormat of the Pac-12 currently. I think that's fair to say they're the doormat. I believe they are, at least right now. And he can just continue with that. Just quality teams in there. Last year's November scheduling was awesome. It was great.
Yeah.
Anyway, he didn't take advantage of it. Maybe they would in a future date. But yeah, I think it's incredible what Tom Homo's been able to do in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's, you know, some of the November schedules have been a little lackluster, but as you said, Cal is a Pac-12 team, and so there's certainly that. And then, you know, 2015, we're supposed to end the season with Utah State, which actually isn't a terrible way to end either. So let's move on to Independence in general. Brandon, if you read some of the analysts outside of Utah, and some of the journalists outside of Utah, as well as many of the fans, it seems as if Independence is unworkable in the long term. You listen to Tom Homo speak, and it sounds like Independence is very viable long term for the BYU football program. Is this a case of people outside of the program not truly understanding how well this can and is working? Or is there some truth to the naysayers looking out into the future of college football saying, it might work for a few years, but 5 years from now, you better find yourself inside one of these conferences?
Yeah, well the very nature of the discussion being completely hypothetical and just kind of assuming a lot of things, kind of that nature makes you think that both could be true. I don't think either Homo, and certainly the guys writing about it, know what's in store 5 or 6 years down the line. I'm a conference guy. I've always been a conference guy. I do believe that BYU eventually has to get in a conference. And you've heard that expressed by Bronco Mendenhall. Of course, Mendenhall kind of reared it back during Media Day, but he also didn't back away from those comments. And I think if you were to put the screws to Holmoe, I think maybe he would suggest that, yeah, joining a conference is the better option. But they've got to celebrate what they have right now, and that's independence. And it can be a good thing. At least that's what they're hoping and what they believe. But yeah, I'm a conference guy. I believe that college football is changing, and it's going to continue to change and be where you can't be left out. And just with how everything's aligning, and it's so ironic that the only conference where BYU fits is the only conference out there that isn't interested in expanding. It's just a cruel irony in my mind. But yeah, I do believe that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is maybe I tend to agree with the writers more than Holmoe in that regard, but we'll see on that.
Well, following up on that, one of the points of view, Stuart Mandel, I think, mentioned this nationally, as well as you'll hear some fans say this, that obviously I think most people, if the Big 12, most BYU football fans, if the Big 12 came and extended an invitation and BYU accepted it, fans would be excited. Maybe not all, but I think most. The one that comes up, though, is, well, maybe they should go back to the Mountain West or to some hybrid of the Mountain West and the American Conference. From your point of view, is that a viable option 5 years from now, or do you think if that's the alternative, then independence is the better situation?
I tend to still think independence would be better than backtracking, which it would be. It's you leave a conference, it's not going well, and then go back. I don't think that's where BYU wants to find itself. And you kind of wonder if this Power Five thing is really going to materialize where they basically leave everybody out hanging out to dry, and you want to be a part of that, and which I do not believe the Mountain West could fit into that in any way. But anyway, it's just one of those things. It's what we drone on every offseason. It's why you're so excited about the season to start, where they just actually play football and whatnot. Because that stuff, it's so hard to figure out and just kind of dwell on. And it's just, man, when's it going to happen? How's it going to happen? And it just seems like eternity. And it seems like we've been talking about it forever, but it's a very real issue, and it's a very pertinent issue. So it's an issue that needs to be brought up time and again. But my hope would be is we just don't have to ask that question two or three years down the line, and the Big 12 finally expands and invites BYU. And I think BYU, what I got from Bronco's comments is maybe BYU's positioning itself in such a way that when the Big 12 does decide to expand, BYU is unquestionably the first choice, and they know with confidence that BYU will work with them in a very good manner to be a good member of that conference. So that's what I think is going on currently, and we'll see what materializes.
So let's get to the play on the field, or at least talking about what we might see. One of the things that came up that I thought was very interesting was Robert Anai's comments about tweaks to the offense. Now, you and I both know you've interviewed him and dealt with Mr. Anai, and certainly anybody who's watched one of his interviews knows that reading too much into his comments can always be can be dangerous. But is this a matter of the weapons? He talked about the speed and some of the weapons they have. So are we talking about tweaks because of personnel? Because he mentioned personnel. Or is this also tweaks just because it's year two of the offense, and everyone, including the coaching staff, is just going to be more comfortable with what they're doing?
I think you look at the whole picture of the offense, what's going on at every position, and just what you brought up, which is probably the most relevant point, is it's the second year under a pretty radical departure to what BYU did before. And there's really no reason to believe that this offense isn't going to be vastly improved. I really believe that. I mean, just look at everything. They have every running back. Taysom Hill's year after starting a whole season, that's absolutely enormous for any quarterback. But to me, the biggest upgrade is going to be that offensive line. That's so key for any offense. And my favorite interview during media day was talking to DeAndre Wesley. And I've covered him in recruiting. I covered him for the first part of last year. And he always seemed kind of like a always a happy guy, but kind of reserved. He was bouncing off the walls. He was so excited. And the fact that they tapped him as the leader, and he's ready to go, and he's talking about everybody like they're his best friend, how he can depend on them and all that. And he just looked at what Wesley was at this time last year and what all of them were. Wow, what's going to happen? How much am I going to play? Am I really going to be showing in and out every play? Who's this crazy 2J guy who looks like, what's that superhero? Hellboy, right?
Yes.
Now they're all comfortable. And I think chemistry is so big for an offensive line where you're moving as a unit and not individuals. And I think you're going to see that with the BYU offensive line. And that's the catalyst for everything. That's the catalyst for the quarterback having enough time. But I think what... And I was obviously excited about that, but the other thing is the receivers. And you look at Anai's offenses, he's really lacked that true deep threat that can stretch the field. And he believes he has that. One of my favorite moments with Anai, and I kind of hesitate to say this because it was off the record, but prior to the letter of intent day where everyone goes in, I went to Timpview High School, and it was about an hour before BYU's thing where they announced all their signees and whatnot. And I was there to cover Isaiah Nakua. And Coach and I walked in. His son was signing with Southern Utah, I believe it was. And I was talking to Spencer Reed, who's Gabriel Reed's father. And Robert and I comes up to talk to us. And I figure, well, I know how Anai regards the media. He doesn't want to talk to me. So I just kind of congratulate him on his class and, you know, kind of walk away. Anyway, about 2 minutes later, Anai searches me out and just starts talking about the receivers. And I have never seen him that excited. It was just an organic, just a genuine excitement. And he's talking about what he's going to do with these guys. And it was really interesting to see Coach Anai like that. It was a very positive thing that you kind of saw a guy that's been thinking, all I need is this guy, I need this at this position, and I can really, really do things. And I think he really believes that. And I think it's exciting. I think BYU's offense could be one of the better offenses, maybe the best offense we've seen since 2006, which was an absolute machine on that side of the football. But I really do believe that BYU's going to have that potential offensively this year. And we haven't seen that for a long time at BYU. So
yeah,
we'll see how it all works out. A lot to be worked out still, but it's potent. I believe the BYU could be very good. So.
Yes, yeah, I think so. And many of the wide receivers, some of them, I should say, that will play a part next season aren't even there yet, right? Or aren't a quote unquote officially part of it. You know, Jordan Leslie, Devin Blackman, Trey Dye joining as well. As they looked at the depth chart, Brandon, a couple things jumped out to people. You mentioned DeAndre Wesley. And he was on there, and Michael Yek switches to the left side behind DeAndre Wesley, at least if we're to believe that depth chart as it stands now. But the one that kind of shocked people was Kurt Henderson, above Nick Kurtz. Is that real? How much on this post-spring depth chart, from your experience, is real, and how much of it is motivational or just kind of them guessing at this point that'll change during fall camp?
Well, Kurt Henderson did have a very productive spring. You don't want to take that away from him. He was the most consistent receiver out of spring. What you saw from Nick Kurtz was a guy who was totally lost on offense, and he'd be the first to admit it. But I've noticed this several times. Seeing him the last 2 days, Trent Trammell, every press session we saw, he was just owning receivers. I mean, they would get nothing from him. With all due respect to Trammell, who's very good, Kurtz was giving it to him left and right those last two practices. He was looking like the guy, if I'm like, yeah, that's the guy that Oregon offered. That's the guy that USC offered. He looked fantastic, absolutely fantastic. So I think just with that frame of reference, just being so late maybe coming on, that's why Henderson's above him currently. I don't put any stock into it, to be honest with you. I think Kurtz will start, based on what I've seen the last week and talking to coaches. I think that's your starter and at the very least a regular rotation guy. I mean, how do you ignore what he has? 6'6", a guy that can move laterally. at least as good as Kurt Henderson, if probably not better, and a guy that's got tremendous ball skills. I think he's going to have a huge season. And I think Jordan Leslie's a guy that they really like a lot. There's a lot of talk that he's going to be playing the Y position of all positions. Mm. They say he's very physical and very big. So, and you kind of figure he has to play there with all the receivers they have. And you don't want to forget about Mitch Matthews, who I think is an outstanding player. I think when he's healthy, he's a very, very potent guy. You saw that in the Utah State game against a very good Utah State defense. And I think you're going to see more of that. And you don't want to forget about Ross Apple. I mean, it's been the same story 4 years running with him. Is he going to realize his potential? Maybe he will. We'll see. I don't know. And then Devon Blackman, I think a guy with Blackman, I don't think you're going to see it immediately. Just kind of going off with what we saw from Nick Kurtz in spring camp, I think it's going to take maybe a while for him to integrate himself.
Sure.
But when you have speed, you can always use speed. I mean, what does it take? Okay, you're going in, you're running a vertical pattern, you know?
Yes, well, run as fast as you can in that direction.
There you go. just what they did with Todd Watkins. I mean, what did Watkins do his first year? Verticals and deep posts, that's it.
Yes.
And he absolutely dominated. So anyway, we'll see. It's really exciting thinking about all the options. We haven't even touched on the running backs, who might prove to be the strongest position on the offense with what they have with Jamal Williams, L.G. Brown, who coaches are really, really big on, and Paul Lisicki. And you don't want to forget about Adam Heaney. Adam Heaney is going to have a say in the rotation, I believe, when it's all said and done. So
yeah.
We'll see how that pans out.
Lots of interesting things on offense. The one thing that maybe it hinges on, and this is true most years for most programs, is the health of Taysom Hill. So looking at that depth chart and seeing the options behind him.
Oh boy.
On a scale of 1 to 10, Brandon, how worried should fans be if Taysom Hill goes down?
Oh man, I Taysom Hill is so extraordinary in what he can do. You can't match what he does, but
sure.
But I think Christian Stewart's a kid that can come in and be very productive. I do believe that. I believe Christian Stewart has what it takes. Beyond Christian Stewart, there are a lot of scary thoughts and a lot of question marks because there's really not a lot behind him currently. You have a bunch of young guys, a bunch of guys waiting to be able to play due to the NCAA transfer rules. You just hope those top two guys can stay healthy because I think it's somewhat remarkable that Hill was able to stay healthy last year. To me, that's a very positive thing. I thought for sure he'd get injured at some time with what they were doing offensively and how porous that offensive line was at times. But maybe he can do it again. We'll see. But I do believe Christian Stewart can be a very productive quarterback in BYU system, and I think he could suffice. Maybe not as good as an Ammon Olsen, but good. I coaches have a lot of confidence in what he can do.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that as you look forward on the quarterback pipeline, if you will, Brandon, is, you know, I've heard a lot of people talking Taysom Hill turning pro. I'm not gonna start that talk until if he turns in a great September, maybe we could start talking about that. But I think we're way too early. So assuming he stays for his senior year, it starts getting really crowded really fast with Hossack and Mangum and then others too on that depth chart. Is this one of those things that over time these things seem to work themselves out? Somebody leaves, somebody steps up and plays really well. Is this one of those things, or do you think there could really be a logjam here in 2016 for that next big chance to be the starter for BYU?
Well, there certainly could be. There's been rumors about Mangum thinking of transferring. I don't know if you should give it much credence yet into those, but what we do is, and I'm guilty of this too, is you just lay out the quarterback line as it's just some smooth thing about this guy's going to happen and then this guy. And it almost never works out that way. And I just think it's a coach's best interest to get a guy on campus and just compete. It will work its way out. And then you're probably going to have some guys transfer. That's the way it is in college football these days. Quarterbacks don't want to wait. The years of a three-year backup quarterback are they're almost over. If not totally over, from what I've observed, just around, and it's not just BYU, it's every program. But quarterbacks, high profile quarterbacks, are not willing to wait. So BYU's probably going to experience that. I wouldn't doubt that for a second that one of those logjam quarterbacks are going to end up moving on. I mean, even look at a guy like Ammon Olsen. He didn't even want to wait 1 year. He wanted to go back to SUU. So,
yeah.
Anyway, it's just kind of the nature of the position. It's a unique position, and yeah. So it's always interesting. We'll see how it works out. But
yeah.
I would hope Mangum comes back. I think he will, because I think he's a star in the making. I really do. I think that kid's going to be a very, very good player.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of talent. So there's wherever he ends up playing, and hopefully in the blue and white of BYU. We'll get you out on one last question, Brandon, and this goes to media day and the coverage around it and some of the things that were talked about. One of the things that has frustrated some fans about Bronco Mendenhall in the past is the will versus skill, which he used that term this time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to phrase it as towards recruiting. I look at the recruiting class they just brought in, and to me, as not a prospect guru by any stretch of the imagination, I see lots of skill. Whether the kids have the intangibles, I don't know. Do you think his will over skill thing is that coach speak? Or because I see a lot of skilled players that they recruit and go after, or is that truly he would take the guy with will over skill when all is said and done, when he decides who's going to play and who's going to be recruited?
Oh man, that's a loaded question.
Well, I try.
Jeez, that is, I honestly believe that it's the latter with Bronco Mendenhall. I really do. He is so done with guys that, being the entitled athlete is something Bronco hates so much, to the point where he just doesn't want to deal with it. He set up his recruiting in such a manner that these kids have kind of a regimen where Bronco can assess properly whether this guy is really going to work for me or not. And I think that goes into the equation. I think it has to. What does an athlete who isn't going to be doing it for you, and a guy that's not totally bought into your system? And
sure.
Bronco has a system. He's a different kind of coach, and he recruits differently. He coaches differently. Every coach has its makeup. But I don't think Bronco's, and probably BYU, is never going to be that school that's just going to coddle the five-star guy and just bring him in and do that. That's just not his way. And you coach to your strengths, I believe. So whatever he's doing is working. But there's an argument that BYU does need to get the more high-profile athlete. I believe that. But last year really bucked the trend. That was a very, like you mentioned, BYU really extended itself to go after some top-flight guys, and it worked. And this year it's no different, especially offensive line. That's a very interesting position to watch this year, because they passed on some pretty good local offensive linemen to aim higher out-of-state guys. I'm very interested to see what that's going to yield. BYU doesn't have any offensive line commitments currently, from what I can tell, and they need six. By my math, BYU needs to sign five or six offensive linemen. So it's going to be very interesting to see those high-profile guys that they can swing. And it's been a while since BYU's really had a lot of high-profile offensive linemen. Braden Kearsley obviously was, but to me, he was an exception, and that needs to be the rule. They need to be signing two or three Braden Kearsleys every year that program. So that's a position BYU should never struggle at recruiting or developing, and they have a lot in recent years.
Yes.
But I think that's going to change, and I think that's a real position to watch as recruiting goes forward into February. So
fantastic. Well, Brandon, we will definitely have you on again this fall to talk football, talk recruiting, and appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
Podcast time.
Podcasting it up.
That's right, Matt. So there's something we need to discuss.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if
it sounds like it's serious.
Ooh, it's serious. Okay. So, on Twitter, on the Twitter, as some people like to call it, on the Twitter, from the Loyal Cougars account, there was a mistweet. Okay?
Uh-oh.
And the mistweet seemed to indicate that Loyal Cougars and the Lawless Republic, a.k.a. Cougar Center Podcast, were at war, Matt.
Uh-oh.
That there was a rivalry within Cougardom. Yes, yes. And then they clarified and said, no, no, no. Totally awesome. Not trying to diss you guys. And the t-shirt mention that happened on the media day. Or Sports Nation, Cougar, BYU Sports Nation, something like that. So don't worry about it. Just seemed odd when they initially read it. And then what they said is, later on, let's start a blog. This was the Cougar Center podcast. Let's start a blogging beef, Biggie versus Tupac style.
Biggie versus Tupac style?
Yeah, it seems a little over the top, but this was my response, Matt. Agreed. But I would like the Tupac role. So, I was
Tupac
given the Tupac
still alive?
Role. He is in my heart. And that's all that matters. So we are Tupac, Matt. Us and Loyal Cougars and Lawless Republic and Cougar Center are Biggie.
I don't even know what to do with that.
I'm not quite sure I know what to do with it. I'm pretty sure that having a rapper rivalry like analogy between two BYU centered podcasts, that seems strange in and of itself. But I do like some of Tupac's songs.
See, that's what I'm trying to decide. Do I really want to be on the Tupac side of this?
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Or do I want to be on the Biggie side?
Whoa, 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 whoa. Where are you going?
I didn't get to choose, though. You just.
I know. I should have consulted you first. It was a rash decision. It was a rash decision. Oh, gosh, man. So many rash decisions. But let's really get into something that's maybe at a higher level than that Twitter conversation, Matt. And that's biting people. So how many times when you were playing sports, Matt, did you just turn to... You played football, you played basketball up until, what, eighth grade?
Basketball into ninth grade, actually.
Oh, into ninth grade. That's right, that's right.
Yeah.
And baseball, you played, what, till seventh or eighth?
Yeah, somewhere in junior high, I think, is
somewhere
when I stopped
junior
baseball.
High, you stopped. Did you ever turn to someone that you're competing with and bite them?
No, but I've seen other people be bitten.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No joke.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. Well, I mean, Evander Holyfield, but...
I was not bitten, but on more than one occasion, I've seen people get bit on the football field.
Well, I'll be darned.
First time I saw it was my sophomore year in high school. We were playing Hull, and at the bottom of a pile, our fullback, who had taken a handoff up the middle, there was a pile of people, and the guy from the other team pulled his helmet up a little bit and sank his teeth into and got some calf meat, like eating a big turkey leg.
That's absolutely gross.
There were bite marks. There were bite marks.
So,
but the refs didn't see it, so there was nothing anybody could do. It's like, but there's bite marks. I mean, what?
Think I bit myself on the calf?
And I think that happened. I want to say that happened against that same team again my senior year, but I don't have as vivid of a memory, so I could just be making that crap up.
So Matt, have you been watching the World Cup?
I have watched some World Cup.
We were asked by none other than Drew Troutner on Twitter, that's at Drewski5. He just said World Cup. He just wants us to talk World Cup. He didn't ask any specific questions. Okay.
I love the World Cup. The World Cup has made me a soccer fan.
I've been a soccer fan. We've discussed this on the podcast. I've been a soccer fan now for several years. I watch more soccer than I watch NBA basketball, which if you had told me that 10 years ago, I would have told you to go back to Europe and leave me alone.
I'll tell you what, that's true for me in 2014. I've watched way more soccer than I watched NBA.
Though I was interested, we'll get to the NBA draft here in a minute, which is happening this evening. We're recording this on Thursday evening. We'll get to that here in a bit, Matt, because it kind of pertains to BYU
not really at all, but we'll get to it anyway. So the World Cup is both awesome and frustrating, right?
Yes.
Because now that almost every sport I follow has some sort of replay mechanism, it is really frustrating to sit there and see a handball when Mexico, in the Mexico game, that's clear handball, but it's one official and he's in a bad angle, right? So
yep.
He probably just legitimately could not see that, right? Mm-hmm. And you say to yourself, well, if only they had cameras capturing all of this. And I know, I get it, it's a flow sport and it's very, but my gosh, they stop all the time when somebody grabs their shin and they kick it out of bounds.
They could figure something out though. If they had somebody in a booth who saw something like that, they could radio into the ref to blow the whistle.
Yeah, sure. And they could figure out a better way than the NFL and MLB with the challenge system, right?
Not hard to do.
Not hard to do. You could figure out a way to make it easier on the officials, especially with the stakes of the World Cup, right? Not turkey legs or calf, human calf.
Or shoulder.
Gotta love a good pork shoulder, Matt.
That's been smoking all day.
So Luis Suarez of Uruguay, he also of Liverpool in the English Premier League. This is not his first time biting someone. So,
nope.
Would you be afraid as his teammate? Or do you think it's at this point you just have to be fearful playing against him?
So far, I don't think he's bit a teammate.
Not that we know of. I mean,
oh, touche, my friend.
I'm just saying, like, in a practice, if he bit somebody, they'd probably, you know, brush it under the carpet because, you know, they don't want it to get out. But it's a little bizarre, isn't it?
A little bizarre? A little bizarre?
A grown man.
Do you mean, have you seen this? He's a grown man. He bit another grown man during a World Cup match.
Yes.
That's insane.
And seemingly unprovoked, quite frankly. Maybe there
Very
was something
strange.
Earlier in the match.
My favorite part is how the guy then elbows him, and he goes down grabbing his mouth like, oh, I got hit in the face. Because you bit a dude.
Yes, he should hit you in the face. That is actually a correct reaction to getting bit. I was talking with somebody about this incident and basically said, if this was my three or four-year-old, and this had happened a couple times, I would say, we've got an issue, but they are 4 years old or 3 years old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Luis Suarez is not 3 years old.
No, he's slightly older than that.
As a fan of Liverpool, recently adopted team, it's kind of disturbing.
Kind of disturbing. The guy's a wacko.
The guy's a nut.
There's a story on ESPN that I read that I found on Twitter where before this happened, an ESPN reporter tried to kind of dig in and find out, like, who is this Suarez guy, you know, and there's some urban legends around him, one that he had headbutted a referee in a youth league back home, and he went digging to try and find the referee and all this, and nobody wanted to talk about it, and there's a weird hit that took place on somebody at some point. Some very, very strange things. Just crazy situation.
So he gets
just
a
insane.
9-game ban, barring the appeal, which he cannot play during the appeal, unlike other sports where they let you play during the appeal. Which I think is great. Could this be the first time where the arbiter goes, actually, they didn't give you enough?
That would be awesome.
Because it's 9 games really enough. I mean, he already had a 7-game suspension once. 9 soccer matches is actually a lot, right? So it's not a weak penalty. I'm not trying to say that. But when it's been multiple occasions and all sorts of other stuff, oh gosh. But let's get to the good part of the World Cup, Matt. So one of the things some people hate about the World Cup is ties or draws. And low-scoring matches, okay?
Yes.
I have to say, and this World Cup has been more high-scoring than some in the past. I have to say, I am starting, and maybe it's because I have lots of gray hair. I'm starting to really like sporting events where defense trumps offense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think one of my favorite memories, even though it's a loss and people might think I'm dumb, but that Boise State game a couple years ago.
Really?
No, seriously. The defense.
The goal line stand or whatever?
Effort, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the greatest moments in BYU sports history, I believe, even though there wasn't a win. That is, I will remember that series of plays until the day I die, right? I will also remember, unfortunately, that they left Riley Nelson in one series too long, okay? But
only one series too long?
Okay, the whole game too long. But so I have really enjoyed some of these battles of where it is 0-0 or nil-nil, as they like to say, late in the match. Do you feel the same way, or are you more, I'm really not interested in, unless it's like one of those 3-2 games?
No, I like the close soccer games because I feel like the way it's like anybody can score at any moment.
Yes.
And they're not necessarily scoring all the time, but they could be just about to.
Yes.
You know, and I've tried to watch, you know, some of the highlight shows at night and some things where they kind of talk through some of the strategy and stuff because I want to understand what I'm watching. And so I've started to see a little bit when they try to set up, I don't even know the right terms here, but when they're trying to set up an attack and you're like, oh, you can kind of see it starting to form and you're like, oh, this is cool. And then they come in and somebody, you know, clears the ball out or whatever, or they get a good shot off. That is fun to watch.
Yes.
And, you know, and sometimes it sails over the net or whatever, but that's fun to watch. I mean, I'll tell you, the U.S.-Portugal match, I couldn't take my eyes off the screen.
It was fantastic. And even today when there was – as the match went on and it became clear that the USA was going to go to the next round, right?
Right.
But there were those last few minutes of excitement. I was on the edge of my seat, even though it really didn't matter, right?
Right.
Even if they had scored, the result for the next round, who they would have been playing and when, would have been the same. I was legitimately sitting there, at work, by the way. The Hispanic Heritage Club for Land O'Lakes, where I work, had a room reserved, and there was about 50 of us sitting in this room watching the match.
That's pretty cool. We had a smaller group, and I missed a bunch of the game, but
I saw the whole match, which was really good. So Matt, one thing I really love about soccer is the running clock.
Yes,
and I like the fact that, you know, my favorite sport is baseball, and you never know how long the game's going to take, which is kind of fun, right? You don't know what you're getting into, but there is a nice advantage to say, this game will be over 2 hours from now.
Yeah.
And there's basically almost no way, at least in these preliminary rounds, that that will not be the case. Kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
I think a running clock in the NBA would be fantastic.
I think you should do it in all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? It's just a different way of keeping time. You'd up the running clock beyond what we have now. They'd have some timeouts, so maybe you can stop the clock that way. But actually, I would love, especially in basketball, I would love if you couldn't.
Yeah.
I would love
it ruined, it has ruined the end of basketball games for me. This is part of the reason I can't watch anymore.
Yeah,
it's,
I know.
In a close game, it's a foul fest, and the last 3 minutes take a half an hour.
Yeah, yeah. It would be nice if the players could decide it in an expeditious fashion. I think I've got the wrong word.
I'm not really sure.
Well, we'll definitely talk the World Cup next time on the podcast as well, because I think
I'll tell you,
go ahead.
What happened to me is right after the match was over, or shortly after the match had ended, somebody wanted to schedule a meeting with me sometime on Tuesday, and I thought, oh yeah, let's do Tuesday afternoon. And then I went back to my desk and saw that I had scheduled this meeting for the time of the game.
Mm.
So I immediately called this person. I said, I am unavailable at that time. Yes. Something has come up.
Something has come up. And I actually put this is my calendar right
now on Tuesday, I've blocked off that time period, and it said, for those that can see my calendar, which isn't everybody in Microsoft Outlook, it does say, if you book a meeting during this time, I will wonder if you are anti-America. So think about that before you book. No one's going to book it on my calendar. I don't want to be anti-America.
Everybody was, I don't know if you saw the, somebody put out on the internet, it was a permission slip from Klinsmann to get out of work for the day. Did you see this?
No, I didn't see that.
So it said, please excuse, I had a blank line from work today. They've got, you know, the U.S. We need their support during the U.S. match. Then it had his signature at the end.
Oh, that's nice.
Somebody was passing them around today at work. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, and I've had jobs in the past where there's no way I could have pulled off what I did today.
Yeah.
But luckily my job has a good deal of flexibility. So Matt, let's jump into actually what this podcast is about. BYU football.
Yes.
So, all BYU sports. Well, mainly football. Let's be honest. We also do basketball and occasionally talk volleyball and some other sports.
Yeah, let's just call a spade here.
But this is a lot of football talk.
Yes.
So Media Day was this week, and they announced a bunch of schedule. No. No, they did not. So I've got a tweet bag question from Justin Sweeney. That's us at Justin D. Sweeney.
Sweeney.
So Sweeney says, who do you think the ACC and SEC team are that Homo alluded to, where he basically said, yeah, this kind of stinks with the SEC and ACC locking us out of that game, and their schedule that has to be against another P5 conference foe. But we actually have something in the work with one of those teams. He says Syracuse, LSU, or Texas A&M. I have no actual guesses, Matt, but I do have a wish. So let's start with you. Do you have a guess or a wish?
Do I have a guess or a wish?
Yes.
My guess is going to be Boston College. And
Boston College, okay.
Texas A&M.
All right. My guess is going to be Syracuse. My wish and hope is LSU. I'd love to play Les Miles. I think that'd be fantastic.
Oh, so it's just one of these teams, right?
Well, I don't know. Homo was pretty,
I'm not really sure what he was saying.
Homo was pretty vague, right? Was he saying there were multiple games in the works with these conferences? Maybe. That's how I think some people interpreted it. I kind of interpreted it as he has at least one game in the works or a series with one team from, you know, one of these conferences. So, but let's talk scheduling here for a minute, Matt, which we've talked before. Looking in the future, they're going to do this one Pac-12 game a year, it seems like, in November. Maybe not every year, but maybe every year. We seem to have some Big Ten, some Big 12, Pac-12 games lined up. American Conference seems to be warming up to us, and we've got a bunch of games with them, and of course the Mountain West.
Did you just say we're going to join the American Conference?
No, stop it. You're just trying to cause controversy. So Matt, why is everyone freaking out about scheduling? Am I nuts, or do I look at these schedules and go, right on, Tom Homo, right on?
Because there's a lot of unknown, and people don't do well with uncertainty. That's why.
Okay, but all right. 2014, schedule awesome or not?
It's okay.
But better than being in the Mountain West?
Yes.
Okay. 2015, awesome or not?
Better than being in the Mountain West.
Way better, man. We're going to the big house.
To the big house. Hey, are we going to the big house?
That's a ridiculous question. Of course we're going to the big house. You mean physically, me and you?
Yes.
Yes, of course. The question is whether we do both Nebraska and Michigan in the same year.
Oh, that's tough because they're so close together.
Yes, yes. And, hey.
But how can we not do that?
Why don't we do UCLA too? Make it a whole month. We'll just get in a car and drive, dude.
Seriously, I can work remotely.
Same here.
Let's do it.
I've got I work in agriculture, man. I can make work trips in.
You can't
Nebraska
make a work trip to Nebraska? Oh, come on.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's easy. I'm in Nebraska all the time. No joke. And Michigan, I could easily do that. Los Angeles is a little harder, though. There's a lot of ag in California. But anyway,
See, we've got to do at least one of those two because right now, unless you know, depending on what else is showing. I don't see another really fun road trip on here until like maybe 2018. But the one I would do in 2018, we've already done.
I think the game in at FedEx Field against Virginia against West Virginia in 2016 is a cool one.
Oh, that could be fun.
I
glossed over that one. That one would be good.
I would do that, and then. After that, I don't know. But my point is this. There's cool stuff coming up. And I think you look at this November schedule and you say, well, it's not a great one. But you're ending the season with a Pac-12 team. They're maybe one of the bottom Pac-12 teams. But, you know, you are ending it with a P5 conference opponent.
Yeah, but I mean... But if you keep looking at some of these out years, right? I mean, you've got in 2016, you've got Arizona UCLA at home.
Yes.
You know, a cool neutral site game. 2018, you're at Arizona, at Wisconsin. 2019, you've got home games with Wisconsin, USC, and Boise State.
Oh, fantastic home schedule. It's the home schedule people have been waiting for, quite frankly.
But that's when some of these deals start to pay off, and it's a long evolving type of situation.
Yeah, it absolutely.
It'll level out a little bit.
I mean, if I still live here in Minnesota, you know, I will be at that Wisconsin game, assuming that it happens in 2018, because it's not that hard for me to get there. You know, I look at something like at Virginia. I'd do that. At USC for Thanksgiving in 2021, I'm already planning that. Let's be honest. You could not pay me to see a game at Stanford, though. I'll just be quite frank. We've all know my feelings about Stanford.
Yes, yes, we do.
I have no desire to see a game there. So let's talk other topics from Media Day. One of the things that came out, Matt, was. Robert and I, the offensive coordinator, being unusually excited about the offense.
Yes.
Talking about the talent, talking about the players, talking about a bunch of these other things to a point that you usually don't see him talk about. Now, one of his comments, Justin Sweeney, that's again at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. What he says is, thoughts on Anai coming out and saying Jamal would break Harvey Unga's all-time rushing record. Pretty bold and uncharacteristic of Anai. Agreed. So Matt, here's the deal. The dealio. Okay. Jamal Williams is currently 10th in career rushing yards with 2,008. Okay. He needs a 1,440 something yards, 47 yards, to break Unga's record, which would be 200 some odd more yards than he got this year. So, over under 344.56, which would break Harvey Unga's record as his career total at the end of the season.
Wait, say that again?
So does he break Harvey Unga's record this year? Does he rush for more than 1,450 yards?
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought you were saying. And then you lost me for a second.
Yeah, that's all right. I do that all the time.
He does.
Okay.
How many yards shy of that was he in 2013? Would you say a couple hundred yards shy of that?
Yeah, a couple hundred yards shy of that total.
Yeah, he does it.
Okay, let me paint a different picture for you, okay? Last year... who was BYU's leading rusher?
Was it Taysom?
Yes, it was Taysom Hill. Good, good. Well done. Well done. 1,500 yards. 300 more yards. Taysom Hill right now, even with sacks included, has 1,680 yards, which is about less than 400 yards behind Jamal Williams. What if Taysom Hill breaks the record? Not this year, but I'm gonna say this. If Taysom Hill does not go pro, which I don't think he will after his junior season, if he does not break, both of these guys are going to break that record in their career. Both of them, that is my bold prediction, will finish with more than 3,455 career rushing yards.
Wow.
And I do think Jamal Williams, if he's healthy, will break the record this year. Because he would have had that many yards had he been able to stay on the field all the games last year. So I do think he breaks it. Though the one caveat is that I think they're going to try to not rely on him like they did at the beginning of the year last year. Right? Because we've talked about his game log and how, you know, he went from, you know, carrying the ball at the beginning of the year 30, 33 times, then he got hurt, and then he never broke like 21 after that carries. So, you know, that's I guess the caveat. Thoughts?
Yeah, they'll probably there will be some adjustments there. But you know, I think that he lost some time. I think they try and create a situation where they're not dealing with that again. I think they'll be a little careful, but you know, he's older, he's smarter, he's, I don't know if he's any faster, but he's pretty fast to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, and they say he's a little heavier, that Jamal is muscle-wise, not that he's been eating too many burritos. So, Matt, in between Jamal Williams, 10th on the all-time rushing list, and Taysom Hill, 13th of the all-time rushing list, is a name that makes sense, Brian McKenzie. It's, you know, see him in the top 15. Played only two seasons for the Cougars. But the guy number 12 shocked me when I was looking at this list. J.J. DeLuigi.
J.J. DeLuigi.
Yeah, and on top of this, his average yards per carry was 5.1. I wouldn't have guessed either of those facts.
I don't think I would have seen that coming.
And of rushers in the top 15... The rusher beside, not named Luke Staley, that has the highest average per rush, Luke had 6 yards per carry in his career, is Taysom Hill, even with the sacks. 5.6 yards per carry. And then, I let me put it this way. I love Jamal Williams. He's a fantastic running back. One of the best Williams. He'll go down as one of the best we've ever had, my belief, barring catastrophic injury the beginning of this season. Taysom Hill, he may be, next to Luke Staley, the second best runner we've ever had. Is that crazy?
It is crazy, but it appears to be true.
He is pretty awesome running the football, pretty awesome. So let's talk receivers, Matt. One of the things that's come out is the deepness of the receivers, the speed, and that's one of the things that I was happy about. A name that just seems to have disappeared almost completely is Ross Oppo.
Yeah.
So Sean Howard on Twitter, that's at Sean Howard 1985, he changed his name on Twitter to I Need College Football and then the amount of days left till BYU starts. I approve of that message. He asks us, Ross Oppo will have more or less than 900 yards receiving in 2014. Matt, over under 900 yards for Ross Oppo in the 2014 season.
Under.
It's not even going to be close, is it?
I think it's over.
I mean, now they've got all of these They've got all of these new receivers, highly talented. Okay, Ross Oppo has been in the program for 3 seasons and has 968 yards. I mean, I don't think it's even close.
No, I don't see anything there you know what I mean? There's no reason to believe that there's a breakout year in the works here.
He caught 14 passes last year in a year. Now, granted, he had some health issues, but in a year where we were desperately seeking a number two wide receiver. Yeah, I don't even think he's in the top three pass catchers on the team this year, statistically. Do you think I am being too pessimistic on that?
No, I mean, he wasn't last year. And I feel like we're in a better situation in the receiving standpoint than we were a year ago.
Depth-wise, yes. I don't know that we have anybody as good as Hoffman, but maybe we do. Some of these guys we'll see. So Matt, his other part of his question, who will be the leading wide receiver?
Oh.
pick one out of a hat, quite honestly. Leslie is well-established as a talent, but this is a different offense. Matthews played in the offense, but he's been unable to stay healthy. Kurtz.
That's
probably my pick.
I think Kurtz.
He struggled in spring football, but I think he'll get the offense down. And also, Brandon Gurney appeared on the podcast before you. Run straight down the field. That is not a pattern that's that hard to teach.
And when you're 6'6".
And fast, and we've got a couple other guys, Blackman and others, that could be very, very fast. Over under 20 catches for a tight end.
Under.
I'm going to go over. I think Mahina becomes an actual part of this offense this year. Yes. Yes, I do. I think the offensive line gets better, and that will allow Hill to check down.
I've just given up on tight ends. The offensive line, though, is supposed to be a lot better. That was another thing that Anai has talked about. There's supposed to be some real improvement there. So maybe you're right. But I remember last year, and I feel like the two years in a row now, we sit there and we're like, okay, who's going to be the breakout tight end this year? And there isn't one.
Yeah, and the answer is no one. No one's going to be the breakout tight end.
But you're saying Mahina's the guy.
I'm talking 25 catches. I'm not talking, you know, lighting the world.
It's not
fire.
Like Dennis Pettis numbers or whatever.
No. But I think he'll actually be a part of the offense instead of a, oh, gosh, look, a tight end had 3 catches this week.
I didn't realize we had a tight end in that formation. Yeah,
do we have tight ends? You know, I don't think it'll be that way. If they can protect him, then I think Taysom Hill will get to spread the ball and it won't be like it was last year, the Cody Hoffman show. Because he had one receiver he could trust, and he either ran it or had to take his first read because there wasn't going to be a second read, right?
Right.
Because of the time that he was given. But we'll see. We'll see. Lots to talk about on that, Matt. But let's finish on this topic, semi-BYU related. Jabari Parker is drafted second by the Milwaukee Bucks. Reports were that he tanked his workout with the Cleveland Cavaliers because he did not want to play with them, and he actually wanted to play in Milwaukee. Now, that may be the first time in the history of the world that somebody tanked a workout to want to play for the Milwaukee Bucks. So Matt, you and I watched the tournament and college basketball a bit. Jabari Parker's renowned talent. Over under NBA All-Star appearances for Jabari Parker, I'll set it at 4.5. 4.5.
In a career?
In his career.
I'm going to take the over.
I will also take the over. NBA Finals appearances for Jabari Parker as a Milwaukee Buck.
Oh,
I'll set it at 0.5.
Under.
I will go over.
What do you think they got? Well, then they're going to have to go. I mean, they're going to have to go figure something out.
I think he is. He's not Kevin Durant. So when I say this, don't the NBA fans will also jump on me. I don't even watch the game anymore. I still follow it enough, you know, and I actually read a lot about the NBA. I just don't watch the games as much anymore, which is weird, but such is my fandom at the moment. I did watch the NBA Finals, by the way, and wow, San Antonio, they're pretty good at basketball. I think they can do in Milwaukee what they did with Durant in Seattle / Oklahoma City. Sorry, Seattle fans. I think they can build a similar. He is. I think he's an otherworldly talent, and I think folks will remember this draft and him and Embiid, who was dropped because of his injury. I think those are the best two players that come out of this draft, for whatever that's worth.
Hmm.
Now, when Milwaukee is in Houston, will you make an effort to go see Jabari Parker play?
No.
I will when he comes to Minneapolis, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
If it works out, I mean, I'd love to go see a Rockets game. I've not been to one. I didn't make one. I didn't make it out this last year. So if it were to work out that way and the timing was good, yeah. I'm not going to seek that out, though.
Okay. Question number two. Jemmer signs with a team in which he starts getting relatively decent minutes. Do you make an effort to go see whatever that team is when they come to Houston?
Yeah.
You did not hesitate.
Yeah.
So that's just a matter of Jemmer being Jemmer and us being BYU fans, right?
Right.
As opposed to, though, as fellow Mormons, we're rooting for this guy. We don't have anything against him not picking BYU. We covered that in podcasts a year ago. We, think those
people. I don't know that we really expected him to.
No, but I mean, those people that came out and harassed him online and stuff
just,
for not picking
silly.
BYU, and it was worse maybe with some of the Michigan State and Illinois fans and such, but it's just stupid. I mean, the guy can pick whatever school he wants to go to, more power to him. If he'd picked, Marquette, right, even a school where you'd go scratch your head and be like, that doesn't seem to make much sense with his profile. Again, keep rocking, man.
He went to play for one of the greatest college basketball coaches of all time.
Yes.
In an historic venue for a ridiculously historical program.
Yes. I've absolutely, as we've discussed, have no problems with that. And quite frankly, I don't have any problems with him tanking a workout. I know people will say that, character or whatever. Here's the thing. How many of us, when we graduated from college, were told where to work?
Yep.
I didn't get told where to work. Now people say, come on, he's making millions or whatever else. But still, I mean, I didn't get told where to work. So,
I'll tell you what, I interviewed for jobs and was given options of places to live. And in one case, was asked about one location, said, no, I'm not going to live there.
Yeah.
You got to negotiate those things, and he just happens to be in a little bit of a different situation.
It was Qatar, wasn't it? They wanted you to come help build a stadium, and you thought, that may not work out well for me. It was a good decision.
I appreciate the confirmation there, but I'm not really sure what you're talking about.
Qatar, with the World Cup, they're building stadiums?
They were not building stadiums for the World Cup when I graduated from college.
I know, but it was, never mind, it was a World Cup joke at the end, very poor one.
Whatever.
And I'm just hopeful they rip it out of Qatar and put it in the U.S.
Yeah!
Which, by the way, they should. The fact that FIFA is now talking about, well, it will be really hot in Qatar, that's not new, the weather in Qatar. It's been that way for many moons.
Yeah, weren't they going to change the timing of it to compensate for that?
Talking about that, but the problem is that screws up all of the professional league seasons, right? I mean, it wreaks havoc on everything. And on top of that, it's Qatar. Like, why the freak do they get a World Cup,
Why? You know, like Brazil, gotcha. Makes perfect sense, right? But not Qatar. I won't be going to that World Cup.
No.
Would you have gone to Brazil if money was not an object?
If money were not an object, yes. I would also make a trip to the moon.
Okay.
If money were not an object. I mean, it's kind of a silly question.
But I mean, like, Brazil, is it intriguing as a host for the Olympics?
Oh, yeah. Brazil looks like a ton of fun.
I have been to Brazil on business. I think it'd be kind of cool to go back there, even with, you know, structural issues and whatever else.
Well, yeah, whatever. You get over that. But I'd get to I'd have to go to games. Like these people that have traveled down there and then are watching the game and like watch parties on the beach and stuff.
It's just insane.
That doesn't make any sense to me. If I'm going to go down there and stay for a week or two or whatever, just go to I'm going to some games.
Yes. Going to actual World Cup matches.
Like, and there were clearly seats in the match. You know what I mean? I don't understand.
Well, and the other part is, if you want to go to Brazil on vacation, that's fine. I just wouldn't go during the World Cup. Unless you were going to sit in one of those stadiums, right?
Yes.
And I have seen some pretty areas, very gorgeous areas in Brazil. That, I mean, it's a very large country geographically, and I've seen very little of it. But there's some just gorgeous areas of Brazil that would totally be worth vacationing. But, you know. Well, Matt, the next time we talk, because it's going to be a couple weeks, we will be off next week and the next week, so it'll be 3 weeks. By that point, there will be a champion of the World Cup. Your totally unqualified, quick opinion on who wins the World Cup. Pick a team. Go.
USA. USA.
USA. You're always USA. A homer. You're always a homer.
France. And that's not an emotional decision because I hate France.
France? Did they even make it into the round of 16?
I don't know. I just know they got a really big team. They've got some big dudes on that team.
Did you just pick France? You picked France? I'm a little disappointed in you. I thought better of you. So let's see. Bracket. I'm going to say, yeah, France is playing Nigeria. I'm going to say Brazil.
Brazil!
Wouldn't it be kind of cool? Or Germany. Oh, I want to pick Germany, sweet. Too, because I think they were pretty good today watching them. Uruguay without
Chomps McGee?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be... to quote Bill Simmons, that's your Patrick Ewing thing. You know, Ewing theory, where basically you do better after the star goes. That would be kind of funny.
That would be pretty funny.
But after his teammates all defended him, saying, well, the guy shoved his shoulder into him. I'm sorry. He did what?
I think you need to go back and watch that video again.
Yeah, he didn't
put his shoulder in his mouth.
He did not. He did not open his jaws and insert his shoulder.
Oh, this guy looks like his mouth's open. I'm going to stick my shoulder in there.
Yeah. That'll teach him.
That'll teach him.
So, but, Matt... Have you watched the Chile commercial? The Bank of Chile commercial?
No.
You haven't?
How have I missed this?
Once we're done, and where I'm going to stay on with you after we're done, and everyone else, if you haven't done this, Google Bank of Chile World Cup commercial, okay? And it's the miners who were trapped underground for like 80 days, basically saying, we have cheated death before as a country. So don't tell us we can't win the World Cup. And basically, the hair on your arms and your chinny chin chin will rise up and you will be... It is awesome.
I've got it right here, so we'll watch when we're done.
Chi, 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 le, le, le! Yes. Yes. The guy just shouts in Spanish the entire time. It's fantastic. All right, well, this has been the podcast, Matt. World Cup, BYU Sports... NBA draft. We've covered it all. Anything else we need to say before we depart?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. We've run the gamut tonight.
We have run the gamut. A little piece of advice. Don't bite people when you're playing sports. Or quite frankly, at any other time. It's inappropriate.
And, of course, tell your friends about the Rise and Shout podcast. We'll be back in 3 weeks and very close at that point to actual football, Matt.
Yes.
So thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.